Let's go back in time to 1932 as Converse brings you historic footage of the legendary original Celtics with whom all great professional teams are compared.
We have now taken over your radio.
Richie Guerin is about to show you the most important step in getting past a man. It's the first one.
And Oscar will inbound it. The men in green, the Milwaukee Bucks, that's Al Cinder against Bellamy.
It has Jordan. Allen shakes free. Gets two!
Gilmore on a big step!
Lead Toledo, Ernest. You get 21.
4:28 to go in the first quarter for the Cal Palace. Here's Barry.
Hello, and welcome back to the Over and Back Classic NBA Podcast. I am Jason Mann. With me, as always, is Rich Critch. And we have Jared Dubin returning with us. He is he is an editor emeritus at Harvard Paroxysm and host of Quo Vadis on this very network. Jared Dubin, welcome back to the show, sir.
Thanks for having me for, I think, the fourth time now, guys. I appreciate it.
he's been here more than I have. It's essentially his show. I'm the guest, really, at this point.
There you go. So we are going to talk about the top 50 case for Kevin Johnson. Some of the overall numbers, he is 94th in win shares all time, 41st in win shares per 48, 91st in box score plus minus, and 109th in value over replacement player. He was four times on the All-NBA second team, once on the third team. He has four top 10 seasons in win shares per 48. He is sixth all-time in assists per game, ninth in assists percentage. He is 93rd on the Bill Simmons Book of Basketball Pyramid of Players, and he is 102nd in the Slam Magazine Top 500. Certainly, tremendous point guard, probably not as well regarded as he should be, especially if you look at the, kind of his numbers, compared to, some of the other great point guards of all time. Jared, I know KJ's one of your favorite players, but what do you think about his case for the top 50?
I think it's very, very similar to the guy I came on last time to talk about, Tracy McGrady, where, you know, it's an outside case just based on the career he had in the NBA. And he would have a better argument if it were a top 50 talents in NBA history discussion. You know, much like T-Mac, he had a couple of years at both the beginning and end of his career where, you know, for various reasons, he didn't play all that much. You know, as a rookie, KJ, I think, played, I'm looking at it now, 24 minutes a game, and then in the last 2 years of his career, which were riddled by injury, last 3 years of his career, he played a total of 56 games, including a year where he missed the entire season. And then in between that, he had a nine-season peak where he averaged 20 points and 10 assists a game, was one of the handful of best point guards in the league, you know, consistently in the top five. But never really a guy where you thought he was the single best point guard in the league. And I think that's sort of what holds him back in the discussion a little bit.
I think one of the things that I, you know, of doing research of Kevin Johnson and looking at video and everything of that, it's remarkable, you know, and we'll go over some of the stats here in a little bit, where he really stands out more than you would almost kind of think just by, if I told you, hey, tell me about Kevin Johnson or whatever, you wouldn't think, you probably wouldn't put him in the category that he really deserves to be in when you look at his overall stats. Another thing as well, just watching him play and just seeing how ahead of his time he really was in a lot of ways. Probe's History, obviously, Curtis Harris has been on this podcast many, many times, wrote a great piece on ProHoopsHistory.com about Kevin Johnson, just talks about just the culture shock of seeing a guy, a point guard who's a great passer. I mean, just an unbelievable passer that could throw it down as well as he could. Like, his dunks are just incredible of what he was able to do and how ferocious he could be. And, you know, we kind of take it for granted now because we have guys like, you know, pre-injury Derrick Rose or like a Russell Westbrook, and that's just kind of commonplace for those guys to do it. But, I mean, you can see the culture shock even when Kevin Johnson does it, and on the announcers and the fans and the teammates are just like, holy crap, like this guy who could just as easily throw a great bounce pass can just just throw and dunk it over Hakeem Olajuwon. Like it's unbelievable in that respect. And when you watch these videos, it's just it's crazy how much it stands out and how much he just flies, and especially in traffic too is how unique it is that he doesn't need a fast break or a whole lot of space to really be able to rise and dunk. Like he can do it over guys, he can do it in traffic. It's really incredible.
Well, I think that KJ, it's interesting that you brought up Westbrook, because I think that KJ is sort of what people envision when, you know, they talk about the balance that Westbrook needs to strike between, you know, being his usual hyper-aggressive, ferocious self and also, you know, putting the full, you know, display of his, the full array of his passing gifts on display as well. I think KJ struck that balance really well. You know, he was a guy who, again, he averaged 20 points and 10 assists a game over the course of, you know, 8 or 9 years, shot almost 50% from the floor during that time too, and I think was taking, you know, 14, 15 shots a night. Westbrook obviously tilts a little bit more towards, you know, the 25 and 8 with a few extra shots direction, and I think that that's sort of what people envision him being when they say, oh, he needs to pass a little bit more. I think it would remind you a lot of what KJ was, not just in terms of, you know, the way he played, but also the athletic gifts in terms of the sheer, like, the athleticism in the same way that Westbrook's does sort of oozed out of his pores. And there were times where he surprised you with the explosion that he had dunking over people.
Yeah, you know, one thing that I think that isn't well remembered is, you know, from his second season on, I mean, he was traded to Phoenix in the middle of 88 season. And then from 89 to 92, I mean, he was either one or two minutes leaders and probably the best player on those Suns teams. And those Suns teams before Barkley was on there were really good teams. And, you know, they had Tom Chambers and they had you know, they had Jeff Hornacek and they had other guys who were pretty good. Dan Majerle, of course. So it wasn't just KJ's show, but, you know, I mean, he was he was kind of leading that attack. And those teams were, you know, really good in a competitive Western Conference. They had a couple of playoff disappointments, but they, you know, they made the 1990 Western Conference Finals. They beat the Lakers in, you know, in the semis, you know, the first Lakers team to not make the finals in forever. I mean, they, you know, they really, I think young Kevin Johnson, you know, kind of before the injury started to take their toll and, you know, kind of some of the other issues. And like I said, was just a dynamic player and was really just an incredible force. I guess the question is, you know, is that quite enough given the depth that we have at point guard?
Yeah, I'm not sure. Because again, you know, like we talked about, With T-Mac, the candle burned very bright, but it didn't burn for that long. You know, I think if he had had more seasons on either side of his peak where he was just a good player as opposed to what he was when he was at his best, then he'd have a stronger case. You know, his all-time numbers would be, you know, a little bit higher, things like that. You know, you look at he wound up with, you know, just over 13,000 points and 6,700 assists. Those are not necessarily numbers that you think of, you know, for all-time 50 greatest players. But that's, you know, a lot of that is because he had just one season, you know, before his prime. And then once his prime was done, so was his career. You know, he didn't have, you know, a second act of his career like, say, Vince Carter did. Or, you know, he didn't have that like Gary Payton did, you know, who we talked about as one of the better point guards of, you know, pretty much the same era, and became more of a shoe-in case because he had a whole nother aspect of his career where he played crucial roles on, you know, really good teams and teams that won the championship and was able to extend the life of his effectiveness, you know, despite not being quite as good as he was before.
Real quick, before we kind of move on here, I wanted to look at, as we do in all these podcasts, is look at how he rates position-wise and era-wise and all that sort of stuff. And this is where he really jumped out of the board with me, and I was just kind of shocked at how well he held up. Aaron position, he's 13th in points per 36, 3rd in assists per 36, 42nd in effective field goal percentage, but what he really stands out, 2nd in win shares per 48, 4th in win shares, then 9th in value over replacement player. And then you look at all-time position-wise, 59th points per 36, 6th in assists per 36, 9th in win shares per 48, 21st in win shares, and 29th in value over replacement player. So he, as far as guards go all-time, and especially point guards, I mean, that we talk about a guy who pretty much in all the big stats or all the big sort of advanced stuff, he's a top 30 guy in pretty much all of them, and that's remarkable.
Yeah, I mean, he was so good for the time that he was good. And, you know, it's sort of unfortunate that his career basically ended at age 30. You know, like I said, after that, he played 56 total games. He was sort of, you know, wrecked by injuries. And even for a few years before that, he was dealing with injuries a lot too. But he was still, you know, incredible while he was on the floor during that time.
Yeah, we did we looked sort of at side by side with a few guys who we kind of put at a similar place in the pecking order. These guys are probably all maybe ahead of him, but just kind of looking at some guys who were, I think, just decent guys to just look at on the surface. Bob Cousy, Hal Greer, Jason Kidd, Steve Nash, and Gary Payton. And, you know, I was kind of surprised that there were some things about him that stood out. He led them all in win shares per 48. He led them all in PER. He was second in true shooting percentage by a landslide next to Nash. The one skill that really stood out to me, which I never really thought much about, was his free throw rate. He was really able to get to the line at a high rate and was really able to, you know, that really kind of stood out as well. So the negative for that is that his long minutes played are by far the least. I mean, he has half the career minutes played of Jason Kidd, basically. So it kind of presents both sides of that. But I do think that I think for me overall for KJ is that there is a case, and it's a surprisingly good case, but it's probably not quite enough, just because, you know, there's a lot of great point guards out there, and, you know, he's just going to end up kind of being stacked behind those guys for the most part. I mean, he's definitely worth thinking about, and I'm glad that we have a discussion about him. He's just a fun guy to have watched play and just a fun guy to talk about, but I do think probably he's going to fall short.
Yeah, I think that you know, you were onto something at the beginning when you said that he was sort of before his time. You know, in this era of attacking point guards that we have now, he would have been, you know, imagine him having sort of free reign towards the paint that he didn't really have throughout the 90s. He already sort of set that kind of mold for the attacking point guard in terms of, you know, getting to the rim. So many of his shots were close. He didn't take a lot of threes at all, and I think that was why he sort of lived at the free throw line. And if he had the kind of access to the paint that players have now because of the way the hand checking rules have changed, I think he would have been, you know, even more so at the line, which is pretty crazy to think about for a point guard that, you know, for almost a decade was at the line 6-7 times a game, or, you know, a few years up there he was at 8 times a game.
It's unbelievable. It's just
that's not something that you would have heard of from point guards at that time.
That's the biggest thing. When I was kind of looking through his stats and looking at his numbers, it was like, oh my God, like I couldn't believe it. Like, I thought it was an error, that I was looking at the wrong thing. Like, maybe, you know, what was that, like, per 100 possessions? I was like, no, that's like per game. Was like, it's just because it's on. I mean, we talk about other guys, you look at comps like Jason mentioned, guys like, you know, a Steve Nash or Jason Kidd or whatever, guys who were just as good at, you know, getting the line and scoring near the basket or whatever. And they're, you know, 2 a game, 3 a game tops. And you have a guy getting 6 a game. It's just unheard of for a point guard. Those are shooting guard numbers. And he was such a good passer too to boot. It's unbelievable, his skill set, and it's a shame we don't sort of recognize him as more than he is, and he just sort of is you know, kind of a fleeting guy. I mean, he's not even, when we talk about those Suns teams, we think of Barkley, I think, first off, before we think of him. And that's kind of unbelievable when you think of the longevity that he had there and what he was able to accomplish there before Barkley even went there. And then what he was able to accomplish, you know, when Barkley was there, and he was still, you know, a vital part of that. And then another interesting thing, too, is if you look at the post-Barkley Suns, he goes right back to what he was doing kind of before Barkley was there, you know, averages 20 a game or whatever. It's just an awesome career that, yeah, unfortunately, just the injuries just derailed it immediately, and then there was just nothing left.
It's interesting that you brought up, you know, that everybody thinks about Barkley on those teams. You know, because I was, you know, too young to catch early KJ, like the first 4 or 5 years of his career. But I guess it was the 93 finals was the first time I ever watched that team, because I was six years old still at the time. But the Knicks had lost to the Bulls in the Eastern Conference Finals. And, you know, before that, you know, I had – once the Knicks were out, it was like, okay, I thought the season was over at that point. But, you know, that year during the Eastern Conference Finals, there was a game like, either on my birthday or the day before my birthday, whatever it was, that, you know, I was still 6 years old at the time. These games are being played at night. But because it was my birthday, my dad was like, okay, you can stay up and watch this game. This was earlier in the playoffs, because my birthday is in the beginning of May. But, you know, when the finals came around and I found out that there was another basketball game on that night, it was my dad's birthday. And I reasoned with him that because I was allowed to stay up late to watch a basketball game on my birthday, that I should also be able to do the same thing on his birthday. You know, even at 6 years old, I had very flimsy logic. But, you know, that night of my dad's birthday was that game in the 93 finals that went to 2 overtimes, 3 overtimes, whatever it was. And I just remembered this guy, Kevin Johnson, having the ball for them, like, the whole game. Like, all he did was score and take – I mean, he took – must have taken, like, 25, 30 shots in the game and had, like, 10 assists or something like that. I don't remember the exact numbers, but I remember – you know, just screams about Kevin Johnson. And I was like, to my dad, like, who is this guy? And he was like, that's Kevin Johnson. So then all I would do was, for the rest of the finals, was talk about Kevin Johnson and ask my dad what Kevin Johnson did in those games. And that was how he sort of became, you know, a guy that I liked, was just because I had randomly stayed up for this one game that my dad let me stay up for when I was 6 years old. Unfortunately, that was sort of the last time in his career that he was fully healthy. And you know, I found out later that he had not even been fully healthy during that season. He had missed a bunch of games. But that was a guy that, you know, I just loved the way that he played. And it came out in that game. And that was true throughout the rest of his career when he was healthy, too. So I didn't even initially think about Barkley on those teams, you know, to get back in a roundabout way to the point that I was making, just because I was this young kid who happened to watch this one game where KJ was doing pretty much everything.
Rich, anything else?
I think that's it for me on KJ. He's going to be an interesting one. I kind of put him up after this. I put him up on an interesting list of guys that I definitely want to talk about and look at a little bit more. I mean, a lot of these guys we've talked about, I've sort of said, yeah, they're on the fence, or that he's a guy, I don't know. I really, after today and after doing a lot of research and talking to different people and looking at the highlights and his stats, he's a guy that I think you can make a legit claim of being on that list in some form or fashion. So as we get closer, I'll have to see, you know, what space pertains and who we'd have to go over or who, you know, who we'd have to take out. But he really did. I mean, I was shocked. I was really, really shocked at how well he holds up.
Yeah.
His rate stats, I think, you know, do a lot for him, because like you said, he didn't play that many minutes, but he was so productive. Yeah. It's sort of his lack of longevity, you know, hurts in terms of his all-time numbers, but helps in the fact that his rate stats look really, really good.
Yeah, I'm on board with you, Rich. I mean, I do think that, you know, he's definitely a guy who's going to be in the mix when we're, you know, making those final cuts. And he's definitely, you know, he's worth talking about. I'm also impressed by, you know, his production. I guess maybe there's a small benefit to the fact that he didn't stick around too long after he started to decline. I mean, once he started to decline, I mean, he basically, you know, he had 56 games in a couple of seasons where, you know, he didn't produce much or play well, and that was basically it. So he didn't have, like, a bad part of his career to drag those things down like some of the other players who might, you know, like, you know, maybe like McGrady or Chris Webber, you know, guys who, you know, who played a large number of minutes and weren't as good anymore. So, but either way, you know, he'll definitely be in the conversation, like we said. Jared, anything else?
No, I think that's it. It's always fun to talk about KJ just because he was such a fun guy to watch. I think it's interesting to see how people will react to him because it's so hard to extricate KJ the player from, you know, KJ the Sacramento mayor who, you know, saved basketball in Sacramento, but also as a politician, a lot of people have very strong feelings about and not necessarily all positive. So I think it'll be interesting to see how people react to his case just as a player and not considering him as, you know, the guy that he's been after his career.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. Well, Jared, thank you so much for joining us again. And everyone can, of course, we're at hardwoodparoxysm.com. You can find our podcast there. And please leave a rating and review for all the HP Network podcasts and for our feed as well over in Back NBA. Either one is good, both if possible. And you can find us on Twitter and Facebook at Over and Back NBA, and also our forums at overandbacknba.com, where we can talk a lot about classic basketball. So thanks, everyone, for listening, and back again soon.